nothing said, we'll, we want to... Want to approve those?
I'll make a motion to approve the meeting minutes from October.
Second?
Second, I'll second.
All in favor of the, how they look?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, let's move on. Thank you. I guess before we get into the unfinished business, I'd like to apologize for missing the last meeting. I was sitting here in town. Somehow I didn't get the email, or I missed it, or threw it away, or something, and I was totally should have been there. So I apologize. I hate it when I'm out of town. It's one thing, but being down, I wonder why you missed the meeting.
We're all busy.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get started with Eric. You're going. Well, there you are. You're already up. Thank you.
Yes. As you recall, we presented this almost this kind of fairly identical presentation earlier this year, February or March. Parking fee program was going to be reinstated, and we added new shelter reservations. You want us to come back and give you an update on that, so that's what we want to do today. To refresh on shelter reservations, to make them year-round. Here are the date when we allow for reservations in the shelters are May 1 to September 30. October 1 to April 30, shelters are available strictly first come, first served. Prior to this season, the only locations where shelters were allowed to be reserved were these five regional parks. Captain Clark. Oh,
yeah. How long can you make a reservation in advance?
Is there a year.
A year? Okay.
Yep. 365 days. What we added to the inventory were 8 shelters in 6 community park locations: Fairgrounds, Philida, Hazeldale, Hawkinson, Orchards, and Pacific. So here's where we had shelters up until 2017. These are all the locations where we reserved. And the numbers in parentheses are the numbers of shelters at each location. And here's where we are now. We've added 8 shelters in the community park, from the community park, so it's a little more balanced. And then the next couple of slides we can show you, okay, here's an overview. 2016, bottom line, total number of rentals without community parks, we had 1,184 shelter rentals. And just as just to give you an idea, shelter rental is one rental per shelter per day. We don't switch them over, so we don't have multiple rentals in a shelter every day. So one day equals one rental. Gross sales, $80,319 in 2016 from shelter rentals. 2017, total number of rentals we had were 1,278, so it's an increase of about 100. It's a little over 100. Revenue increased by about $32,000. The next couple of slides will go down shelter by shelter and just compare 2016 numbers to 2017 numbers. The big trend that you'll see here with 2016 numbers and 2017 is that the regional parks, almost to a shelter, saw a decrease in the number of rentals, which is interesting. I think it's more of that 20, as we look at it, I think there are a few factors. One, I think 2016 was an outlier in terms of the actual number of shelters that we rented. Typically, we're right about 1,000 to 1,100. We had about 100 more in 2016 than we had, say, the last 3-4 years. And then at Captain William Clark, we were flooded for about 6 to 8 weeks. We couldn't rent the shelters. So that was cut in half from 66 down to 35. And then with parking fees being reinstated in 4 of the regional parks, we did have some customers who decided they didn't want to go to one of those parks, but we were able to accommodate them in some of the regional parks. So I think those were a combination of factors why you see that maybe the regional shelters were down versus last year.
I would say too, though, there's just more options. So people would have to reserve something at Lewisville because there wasn't something closer near their house in a community park to rent.
That's definitely it. Like, so, a lot of times, hey, it's the middle of July, you're a week out, you want to rent a shelter. Well, we don't have anything in Lewisville, but we do have something at Fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you get a lot of Ridgefield Battleground addresses at that location. So, and then of the community park shelters, Fairgrounds is definitely the most popular, and then I believe Philida, Hawkinson, Fairgrounds, or Hazelville kind of fell in right in line after that in terms of popularity.
Do certain of the shelters show a trend to always be the most popular? I see Riverview and Maple are the highest in Maplewood, Lewisville. They have certain different amenities or different characteristics that make them more popular?
Yes. Langsdorff, for example, doesn't have electricity.
Okay.
Everything at Lewisville has electricity and water. Some of them, the fees are essentially based on size.
Okay.
Grand Fur and Maple, for example, their seated capacity is 25. If you go to this next shelter, the next slide here, Central and Dogwood. Now, Central can pull up to 200. Dogwood is about 125.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we fall in terms of pricing, is based on seating capacity. So,
excellent.
And then again, like I said, this slide and the previous slide just kind of give you a shelter by shelter to look at how we did, or how the rentals did. So, any questions about that? We can get to that at the end, but just moving forward. So parking fees were reinstated this year, effective April 3rd. We staffed the booths between May 1 and September 30 and some off-season dates. For example, we got Turkey Trot on Thanksgiving Day at Climeline. We will staff the booth on that day. That'll probably be the last day of the year where we'll have staff at the booth to collect. And the parking fees are collected at Freshman's in Lewisville, the Climeline Pond side of Salmon Creek Regional Park, and Vancouver Lake. Here's where we started. Daily fees were 2, 3, 6, and 8. We had an annual pass for $30. And annual pass sales began on March 1st at these four locations. 2018 passes will go on sale December 5. When we presented earlier this year, we talked about raising the price of the 2018 pass to $40, and then when we got into the sales and got some feedback from our partners that sell the passes at Battleground Community Center, and we decided that we're going to keep the price the same. If you go to the next page, go back. I can get into that. This is kind of where we started. The reason why, bottom line, why we're going to keep the price the same is, it ain't broke, so don't fix it. We sold 3,100 passes at $30.
Pretty nice.
Great.
And if we could implement a discount program, sure, we'd have to raise the price to $40, I think. And it creates a level of, it creates additional administrative work in terms of how you track the discounts, who gets them, all those kinds of things that just take more time and staff time and effort to track, as opposed to just a flat 30. So that was the thought process as far as keeping the price the same. And this is what the pass will look like for 2018. So this was the feedback at the beginning of the season. When you drive up into to one of the parks to pay, there's a self-pay station, and you put your money in the envelope and put your envelope in the pay stations. A lot of people were happy about it, and these folks wanted to let us know what they thought differently about it. So I enjoy some of the feedback that the staff gets. So where did we finish? Gross sales as of the end of October, we're sitting at about $512,000. Daily parking fees, and then sales in the booth were $462,000. Parking pass sales were sold at Battleground Community Center, the Permit Center downtown, and here at the Operations Center totaled about $36,000. And parking contracts, so we totaled a little under $15,000 in parking contract sales.
What's a parking contract?
Parking contract is, let's say you have a wedding, you can pay for your guests. We'll set that up with you in advance for a $25 administrative fee, where we just basically put a sheet in the booth, like a sign-up sheet, and all your guests that come in, they have a pass.
Okay.
Or they come in, sign the sheet, we give them a pass, they go into the park, they don't have to pay for the parking, and then we bill you after the event.
Okay. That's very user-friendly.
It's customers really like it. I have some folks, larger events that have, want to kind of do things their own way, but for the most part, it does help to speed the line along. As I mentioned before, annual pass sales just a little under 3,200, and I broke it down by site. Nearly sold 2,000 passes in the food booths, which is a great number. And Battleground Community Center was also tremendous. They sold a little over 700 passes for us. We're going to continue to sell passes at these four locations during the year. Fee booths, we probably won't start selling them until March or April when we have someone in the booth on a regular basis. Passes will go on sale December 5, so we'll have 13 months of sales this year as opposed to, say, 8 or 9. So, and then just kind of some general statistical information for you. In the fee booths, total number of transactions we've processed through the end of October were almost 134,000. So that's the $2 parking fee, all the different types of parking fees, parking passes, refunds, all that kind of stuff. And the vast majority of the sales were of the $3 cash variety. So just a little under $115,000 cash transactions. Most of those were of the $3 variety. We did start taking credit cards this year and almost had $100,000 in credit card sales. So that's about, it was about 20% of our sales were credit card, at least in the booths.
Was there a debit to that for collecting those through the credit card company?
Yeah, we get charged for every credit card transaction. It ended up being about $6,000.
Okay. How much?
$6,000.
$6,000.
So it was about 28 cents per credit card transaction. But the vast majority of fees, we didn't get charged, at least by our credit card processing company, by the transaction merchant for cash. We only charge for cash. We get charged with banks for depositing it. Mm-hmm. But we don't get charged by our vendor there for processing cash. And then you asked to come back to you about parking fee waivers. How many did we have, and what was the total amount of parking fee waivers that we issued? It was a little under about $7,000. So this does not include, however, the client kid fishing derby doesn't include all the permit fees for that event. Including our permit fees and staff time, we're probably looking at about a $10,000 total waiver for that. But that's the biggest one. I think the policy that was written kept those kind of waivers to what you were hoping for in terms of not just opening it up, so it's not just a free-for-all waivers, but it allowed these events to get the waivers that they requested.
Why did we waive a wedding private event? You knew I was going to ask that.
I'm going to say that again.
So the last one here is a wedding.
Why did we waive a wedding?
So one of the customers rented or paid for the shelter last year prior to parking fees being reinstated.
Okay.
Came to us and initially we declined it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sorry, but parking fees apply to all, and that escalated above.
Uh-huh.
And was approved above. Parking, just said go ahead and approve it.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's good.
We did get a reasonable number of, I don't know if you want to call them complaints, but questions about, hey, why, I rented my shelter prior to the parking fees being reinstated. Uh-huh. Why do I have to pay them?
That's fair enough. What about the Sunday service? The same thing?
It was the same thing. They requested the same similar request, but we did tell them that next year the parking fees would be applicable.
Good. Okay.
And then the last one is the labor materials. And then moving forward, so this is currently what we've got set up at Louisville and all the other parks. It's a self-pay station. The envelopes are in the green box. You fill out the envelope. tear off the top half of the envelope, keep it with you, put it on your dash, put the envelope with the cash into the slot, and that's your payment, is an honor system. And what we have going forward to the board in December is a funding request for about $30,000 to pay for some of these, to replace these, which would be nice. Yes.
Will those have the annual passes in them as well?
I know they do that. They are capable of doing that, but the annual pass, it's, as you saw, it's right. a bigger piece of paper that hangs on your dash. And that's, I like those because it's easier for our staff to see those when you come in,
right,
and identify, number one, that you have it, and number two, what the pass number is. And at Lewisville, this is kind of the inside lane right here. At Lewisville, we've got a second lane that the pass holders can just drive by. So if they've just got a little piece of paper receipt, it's going to be next to impossible for the staff. So we can do that. They would have that option, but I'm reluctant to do it because it would slow down the line and make the line longer.
Right.
So, you know, we've got so many different things we have to hang on our thing now. I think we ought to kind of start backing away from that hanger, even if it is easier for you. And maybe we put a sticker on the bumper, or I don't know, but
something like that.
But go ahead.
No,
didn't mean to.
No, that's it. That's where we are, and that's kind of where we're at. Can
we at least hear what it might take to charge at all our community and regional parks, maybe lower the actual annual fee to 25 instead of 30, and charge at all the sites where we have a charge for the shelter? Could we look at that for next year?
Eric's anticipating the phone calls.
Yeah.
Well, the time has come. I mean, it's there. And I just think that, you know, we could lower it a little bit. And the Fairgrounds Community Park, why do you not pay there when you pay it at one of the other parks? So I just, I'm thinking maybe we ought to start looking at it much like the state parks do and every other bigger regional system does, and just make that a general charge for our park system, for the not the neighborhood parks, not the neighborhood parks, but the community and regional parks.
I think logistically it might be difficult.
I'm asking you to study it. I'm not asking you to do it. I think it would be appropriate for us to move to that next level more than not.
I think the problem with that is, like, the community parks are used for, like, soccer practices every night.
I would be very upset if I had to pay every time I went to drop my kid off at Philaida.
Exactly. So the regional parks, I feel, aren't used as much on a daily basis by the same group. You know, they are by some, and those people buy the passes. But there are a lot of events like soccer practices or mom group meetups just to walk around the park.
Dog parks. Once a year, $25 to use our parking lots. It doesn't seem outrageous to me. We've got all the cost of operating these things, and now we'll have these systems in place. Maybe it's $15 we do, but I think that we, by selecting out just the four, was it five parks or four that we charge?
Four regional parks.
So how did we choose which four originally?
Kind of traditional.
Originally, when they, I couldn't speak to the original identification process when they were in screen.
So there's no particular reason for those four outside of it's just always been the way it's been.
The most popular is my guess. This is one reason I would think Lewisville is tremendously popular. We did about $165,000 in parking fee sales alone just in Lewisville.
A lot of those have controlled access too. A lot of those community other parks that we have, the regional parks, there's all kinds of walk-in, backstreet, neighborhood access issues. That would be, I think, problematic from at least a management or a collection
each
standpoint.
Of the regional parks has a fee booth, or just I don't know when they were built, if those were those installed just as like a welcome booth for someone to be in the booth just to.
They started over time. The fee collection program actually started back in the 70s. And I believe Cleveland was actually one of the first ones.
Yeah, it was.
Then it went to Lewisville Park,
and then Lewisville, and then
Lake and Freshman's Bar. And those were the four that were identified as true destination sites where we could actually charge. And Whitman was another park when we owned that, and that's now a city location, as well as Waterfront Park. Mm-hmm. Like that one is a charge to get into as well. Mm-hmm. So the two city parks. And so that was the history, you know, back then.
Yeah.
And so it has never expanded beyond those regional sites. Right. Some of our other regional sites, like Captain William Clark Park, Clackamas, it'd almost be impossible because we don't have parking lots that are conducive to channeling people through. They got multiple entries. Sure.
You have to look at different models of doing it.
Well, you're looking at a new model with your pay things, well, and there's so much flexibility in those.
What I will say with these is they wouldn't necessarily, or how should I put this? Compliance increases dramatically when you have somebody in a booth. Mm-hmm. If we don't have somebody in a booth collecting, I can tell you that compliance does not. It goes down dramatically. These will definitely be, operationally for me, these will make a world of difference in terms of how and when we collect cash. But I wouldn't identify these as just strictly a replacement, because having someone in the booth speeds the lines into the park on it become much faster than you have to stop at one of these and get out of the car. I mean, think about when you go to a downtown location to have to pay. If you've never seen the machine before,
but we're getting used to that.
Yeah. You are.
We're doing it everywhere.
But it still takes more time, I think, to just get out of the car as opposed to just drive up to a booth and somebody's in the booth.
The other day I went to a business meeting over at the zoo, and I had to do exactly what you're saying.
Yep.
And I was running tight for time, but the world is changing a little bit, and I don't see a lot of big new money coming from general funds, so I'm not so certain we shouldn't try to start building revenue that helps keep these parking lots up. And the other idea is that we really would like people to walk in. We'd like, you know, people to use the trails and hike. So I would like it just at least somehow it be studied. I'm not saying you should do it, but I'd like to know what the ramifications of doing something like that would be.
I agree with Kelly. It's worth looking at. Obviously, there's a lot of potential problems with it. But if we're, you know, if the current system is just based on effectively this is the way we've always done it, these places are easier, you know, that's not the strongest argument for those as opposed to another park. So,
well, I think there's a public perception issue here too that we have to be really sensitive about. Number one is we weren't charging fees for many, many years, and now we're charging fees again for these uses again. So there's the public perception, well, it used to be free, now I'm paying. Some people support the payment for the fees because they see those revenues go back in those